Several months ago, pianist Simona Dinnerstein recorded A Character of Quiet from her home on her own piano. She's done that again, her second recording in less than a year, which is almost unheard of for her. This one is called An American Mosaic, and the seed for this new release started with a phone call from American composer Richard Daniel Poor. He was really struggling with his health and severe anxiety during the pandemic, and it was her music, her playing on her Bach recording, that gave him the will and the comfort that he needed at that time. And he decided he was going to write a piece of music to commemorate all of those who've been impacted by the global pandemic. It's just been released. It's called An American Mosaic, and it was written for Simona Dinnerstein. She shares her story now in this edition of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher. Well, Simona, the last time we spoke, you had just released A Character of Quiet, a recording that your producer convinced you to make during the pandemic, and you were very hesitant about that, but in the end, grateful that he had encouraged you to do that. And now you're releasing a new recording that is, well, it's sort of an historical document of the global pandemic from various perspectives. What was your first reaction when composer Richard Daniel Poor told you that he was writing this piece with you in mind?
Well, it even started a little before that, because I received a phone call from Richard in the middle of the spring when everybody was sort of in the first wave of dealing with the pandemic. And I didn't know Richard personally, and so to receive a phone call from him was quite a surprise. And he called me to say that he wanted to thank me for my Bach recordings, which he had been listening to and which had really been helping him get through the difficult lockdown that he was in LA, that he'd tried like various kinds of medications to help himself relax, and nothing had really helped him in the way that the Bach had done. So that was already just like a very, it was a very moving phone call to receive. And also like it felt like a tie that we had with each other that I didn't know we had, you know, which is something that is interesting as a recording artist when you receive a phone call or email from someone and they tell you that. And then he went on to tell me that he was thinking about writing a major piano work, which would be basically commemorating all of the different people in our society who had been affected by the pandemic. And he wondered whether I would be open to him writing this piece for me. So it was kind of like a double wonderful phone call to receive from him. And I think at that point, I believe I was getting ready to record A Character of Quiet right then, and I didn't have anything on the horizon after that. And so it was really a gift in many ways, because Richard gave me a very absorbing project to be part of over the summer, which really helped me as well.
Inside the physical disc, I was just reading some additional liner notes that he wrote. I didn't realize that one of the things that was creating so much anxiety for him was he's an asthmatic, and he learned that if he contracted COVID, that he would have like a 30% chance of surviving. I mean, that's really serious anxiety. How do you keep yourself safe? Why do you think the music of Bach was so comforting for him, and in particular, your recordings?
Well, I could understand about Bach because I think that Bach's music is a source of solace for many, many people of many different backgrounds. I've talked to lots of people about it. There's something about his music. Personally, I think the thing about the music is that it has many different sides. How do I say this? The music is several different things at once. And I don't think that a lot of music is like that. Like, usually music conveys a more particular emotion or more particular character. And I think that in Bach's music, you can have sorrow. You could have a kind of sense of prayer. You could have a sense of hope or a feeling of warmth, of humanity, all at the same time. And I imagine that that's what he was responding to in Bach's music. In terms of me and my recordings, I think he felt like I was playing it with a certain type of warmth that made him feel like I was speaking to him, that the soul of what I brought in the music just went right into his inside himself, and that's what he was responding to, I think. And you know, of course, there were other things, like he was very he really loved my sound. I think he felt like I was playing the music the way he had imagined it should be played. So that was very lovely.
How did that make you feel when you got that phone call? I mean, I know it was kind of surprising and you didn't know him, but especially I would imagine in a time like this where everything was so uncertain, to get that kind of maybe a feeling of reassurance from someone. What did that feel like?
I think it was, it definitely made me feel less like I was just living in a vacuum, or that I had, that my music had sort of disappeared into the ether. You know, I mean, I felt like this whole period has been a very strangely disembodied period for all of us. And certainly back then, I felt like, you know, everything had stopped. The concerts had stopped. It was fairly new. You know, I think he must have called in May or April, and March is when the lockdown started. So it felt like somebody reaching out a hand from, you know, across the country. And of course, the fact that he is such a well-regarded composer, I mean, he's really, you know, incredibly accomplished composer, and his music has a lot of heart in it. And as a musician, of course, you take that kind of compliment from another musician like that. It has a lot of weight, you know. Not to say that that people that aren't musicians who say things like that to me aren't also felt. I also appreciate them, but there's a different kind of a weight to hearing a fellow musician like that say something to me of that depth.
An American Mosaic is the main piece on this recording, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. There is music of Bach on this recording, kind of a suite of pieces at the end. Can you tell me more about these three transcriptions and why it's important that they're on this recording?
Yes. Well, this whole project was massively facilitated by the Oregon Bach Festival. They supported this commission. They've supported me in the past. They were one of the co-commissioners of Philip Glass's third piano concerto, which he wrote for me. So they were part of that consortium. And they also had really supported Richard. They, at the same season, I believe, they supported the commission of The Passion of Yeshua, which, you know, just won one of the Grammys for Best Choral Performance. So they were involved with both of us, and they decided this was a really great project to sponsor. So the idea was that we would have a virtual performance, a virtual premiere of this piece in December. And we pretty much knew that there wouldn't be concerts then, and it would have to be virtual. An American Mosaic is about 50 minutes long, which is a huge length, but it felt like it needed something a little bit more to fill out the program. And since Bach is what connected Richard with me, and it's the Oregon Bach Festival, I thought it would be really interesting if Richard transcribed some Bach pieces for me, so that it wasn't just playing straight Bach, but I was playing it through the lens of Richard Daniel Poor.
It's interesting to me that when the pandemic started and you stepped away from the piano for a while, and then your producer convinced you, let's make a recording from your home. And now you've made two recordings from your home. Is that right?
Because
this virtual concert happened in your home, and that became this recording. What does it mean to you to be able to do that now? Does this feel kind of like a new normal for you, maybe, in a way?
It's wonderful to know that I can record at home. I'm so pleased with the sound that Adam captured in both recordings, of a character of quiet and an American Mosaic. I love being able to use my piano, which I know intimately, especially now, having spent a whole year at home practicing on it. It's a funny year. I was just talking about it with my son, actually, because today marks a year since we brought him home to keep him safe here from he was in college. And we were thinking about how much has happened over this year. And for myself, I feel like a very strange combination of having been completely inactive and very unfocused and, you know, didn't achieve all the things I wanted to achieve. And on the other hand, having produced two albums, which is like way more than I would ever do in a normal year. So I feel very proud that I was able to do that despite my challenges in being focused and disciplined and all of that.
It's interesting because it's almost like by not trying to force solutions, the solutions just appeared for you.
Yeah, I guess that's a way of, yes, that's true. I mean, this both of these projects came to me in a way. I mean, A Character of Quiet was really propelled by talking to my producer and him being encouraging. And this project was propelled by Richard getting in touch with me. So usually my projects all start from my own initiative. So it's a different way about doing things for me.
Why is solo piano such a fitting way to represent an American mosaic?
Well, that's a very good question. I should probably ask Richard that question. I never asked him that. I wondered whether it was just a sensible solution for the pandemic because, you know, it's so hard to collaborate with anyone when you have to be isolated. So solo piano has suddenly become a much more marketable instrument because it's just one person by themselves. I think also piano has the ability to sound like so many other things, other instruments, voice. there's the opportunity for counterpoint in a way that there isn't in many other instruments. And Richard is a very contrapuntal composer, and he really incorporates that into this piece. And I think he also is a pianist, so maybe for all of those reasons, it made sense for him.
I also wonder if it doesn't kind of represent what we were all experiencing during the pandemic. You know, the piano is something that a lot of people have in their homes. You're in that isolation, and you have access to it. I don't know.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it. I mean, I hadn't thought of that, but I did think about the fact that we recorded it at home, which was not the intention. We wanted to record it in a concert hall, you know, with nobody there. But, you know, Richard wanted it to be a video of me performing it, you know, like a performance in a concert hall. And we had it all set up to do that. And then at the very last moment, like a few days before I was going to travel to Worcester, Massachusetts to record it at Mechanics Hall, the COVID numbers were just too high for me to travel. And so we had to change everything and do it in my home. And I thought that that was the appropriate place to record this piece because it's what we were all doing. And I think it has a kind of intimacy to it that makes sense at home. And even the sound of it on the recording, which has a very intimate quality because of being in my room, I feel like that it gives a kind of private feeling to the music, which is great.
When the concert was live streamed, the video, what kind of response did you get from viewers, from people who were logging in and watching that concert?
Well, people were extremely moved by this music. And I remember Richard saying he got like many, many emails from people about it. It's a very, I don't want to say it's a sad piece of music, but there are parts of it that are just, so, it's very tender. And there are parts of it that are really fun and crazy, like I love the movement Parents and Children. Which really sounds like children jumping off the wall and driving their parents crazy as they did during the lockdown. And it just has a bit of everything in it, which is what we were all experiencing.
You had to spend a lot of time learning Richard Daniel Poor's language, digging into the tapestry of his work to be able to play these pieces. What did you discover about him as a composer that helped you interpret this piece?
So when I first was working on his music, I was not really familiar with how he writes for piano and his harmonic language, which is very much his own. Every composer has their own. And so it took me a little while to understand that and for it to become natural. But I think that the main thing that I felt about his writing is that there's a tremendous sense of narrative in his writing. And he really wants music to be phrased in a way that sounds like speech or sounds like song. I think he writes a lot for the voice and he thinks a lot about text. He certainly has collaborated with some of our best American writers. So there's a sense of text, even though there is no text. And you need to be able to convey that. And so through the use of rubato, through timing, through how you articulate, how resonant something is or not. So all of those things were things that I had to really discover.
Can you give me an example, like where we hear some of those things in which movements?
So, for instance, there's a movement called Rabbis and Ministers. You can tell when it's the rabbi and when it's the minister, you know, it's going back and forth. And the rabbi or the cantor, the way that it's sung, the way that it's written down, obviously Richard had to write an exact rhythm, but no cantor would sing with that kind of exactitude. There's a kind of freedom to it that makes it sound like somebody is singing a prayer. So I had to really work on that and be able to make that sound free and almost like a rabbi just singing, you know, off the cuff, a prayer.
I know that Richard Daniel Poor had the chance to study with Leonard Bernstein and Aaron Copland. Where might we hear influences of these American composers throughout this piece?
Oh, that's a good question. In The Visible Enemy. I was practicing that movement, and I kept thinking, this is really reminding me of something. Like, I feel like I've played something like this, but I couldn't think of what it was, and it really kept me up at night for quite a few days. And then I realized that it was so much like Copland's piano variations, like one part of Copland's piano variations. And I called Richard and I said, do you realize it's like Copland's piano variations? And he was like, oh, well, you know, I studied with Bernstein, who studied with Copland, so yeah, for sure I'm influenced by Copland. and that was really interesting, but it's quite an interesting parallel. If you can find that spot, it's very interesting to compare. And then I think that there are other parts, like the movement Journalists, Poets, and Writers. To me, that has a very Bernstein quality in the syncopation, like the energy of the syncopation and the rhythm. I feel like there's a really strong connection there.
As I was listening to that movement, Journalists, Poets, and Writers, I was thinking, wow, they can't keep up. Yeah. That was my immediate reaction, was they can't keep up with all that's going on.
No, they can't.
And it was very unsettling in a way.
Yeah.
What did you appreciate most about working with Richard Daniel Poor on this piece?
I think he was really pouring everything into this piece when he wrote it. Like, I think it was, I don't think it was just composing. I think it was almost a type of therapy for him to write it. And I felt that being part of that process was very profound. And he's also, he cares very deeply about his music, and he knows every note that he's written. And that's really kind of, that's amazing to work with somebody who has such an intimate knowledge of their own music. Not every composer is like that, you know. And it was a different kind of process, because most recently I've worked with Philip Glass, and he has a very different way of composing. Like, it's almost like he composes in a dream. And then afterwards, he doesn't remember why he did so-and-so, or the process of writing it is a mysterious one with him. And it's almost like he lets go of it afterwards, and it becomes something that's more the property of the performer in a way. Richard Daniel Poor is not like that at all. I mean, he's quite the opposite, in that he's very, very invested in how every note is played, and he knows how he meant it to be played. So there are ups and downs to those different approaches, you know. At a certain point, I had to think with Richard that he came to me because he loved how I played, and I felt that at the end he just had to trust that I was going to bring all of the same values to his music that I brought to Bach. And I think he accepted that that was the case.
This recording features four constellations, the intervals between the stories that are being told. Richard Daniel Poor said that these were inspired by dreams that he had where he was visited by an angel. Do you know anything about those dreams? Could you share what he experienced and brought to the music?
Yes, he referred to them, and I feel like he had this sense of visitation. And sometimes he referred to me as an angel, too, which was interesting. I think that I didn't want to ask him too closely about that, because I think there's something kind of private about having an experience like that. But what I would say is that the constellations are the most contrapuntal part of the piece, and he definitely thought of a contrapuntal structure to the whole work that is brought together by these constellations. So the first constellation is monodic. It's just one melody. And then the second is a two-part invention. And the third is a three-voice fugue. Is a four-part chorale. Those are representing these visitations, and they're contrapuntal, and it connects it all to Bach in my mind. And I think that's a really beautiful thread that runs through the whole piece.
In the notes that I read, he said that the inner two constellations are dedicated to two major African-American voices that we've lost in recent years, in particular Maya Angelou and Toni Morrison.
He dedicated a few of these movements to different people, and I can see it in the score. In fact, the last one, the fourth constellation, he dedicated to me, which was really lovely. It was also my idea that it be a chorale, so I think that might have been part of why he thought of that. But there is a thread going through this piece which has to do with the BLM movement. And, you know, he was writing it in the summertime when there were protests going on. And Richard is an extremely socially conscious person. And there's even a movement that's called Prophets and Martyrs, which is dedicated to Black Lives Lost. And so there's that feeling going through the whole piece.
I was struck by how peaceful track 12 is, Doctors and Interns. And it really feels like a special moment for those who really were witnessing the pandemic head on. How does it feel to you?
Yeah, I think that Doctors and Interns might be my favorite movement. Part of it is, I think, a tribute. He dedicated it to his doctor. So I know that Richard feels a tremendous debt to his doctor. He feels like his doctor has saved him through this whole process. So there is the sense of gratitude, too, which I think is in the music. But also, I feel that there's the feeling of witness. You know, it's like bearing witness, that you think about all of these people in hospitals, working in hospitals, seeing patients suffering and seeing their patients' families at that time not able to be with them when this was all going on. And I feel like there's this tremendous sense of loss and of care. The music has a lot of care in it. Feels personal, which not everybody associates with doctors, you know, but I think that this period that we just went through both made us appreciate doctors in a different way and perhaps made doctors feel differently too about their profession. I don't know, but I mean, I'm sure that doctors had a sense over this period of time that their importance in society was like bigger than ever, you know.
There's just so many heroes represented throughout this piece. Sometimes it's kind of overwhelming. Like when I was looking at all this, it's like literally I could think of everything that I've read if I haven't experienced it myself, like teachers and students. It has such a playful feel to it, but then of course there's moments of chaos. Because distance learning is incredibly challenging, and it's going to have a huge impact on the future of all these kids, especially some of whom are getting left behind because they can't keep up. I mean, what was your experience as you were learning and playing that piece?
Well, my husband is a teacher. He teaches fourth grade. So I've definitely experienced that at home with him teaching. At that time, when I received the music, when Richard composed it, he was having to teach remotely. And it was, I mean, that was a struggle for sure. And I think the music, what I like is that there's also a lightness to it, because certainly like with my husband, he was trying to be light with his students over Zoom. Like he was trying to not talk about what was going on, like to make them have fun. To make them feel engaged to do things that they could actually achieve over distance learning. And I think that a lot of teachers really try to do that with their students. So I feel like the music reflects that a lot.
Are there any other of these heroes that you'd like to bring to light that we haven't talked about?
I think that the middle movement in Elegy for Our Time is, in a way, the heart of the piece, I would say. It's right on movement 8. There are 15 movements, so it's right in the middle. And that is like, that's an American song to me. You know, like it just has that feeling of being, I mean, obviously it's incredibly sophisticatedly composed, but it also has a feeling of being like a song of the plains to me. It's something that I feel like you listen to it and you can identify that it's American. And it has that quality of being, like, honest, straightforward, like, you know, a song that we would hear almost like a folk song that everybody would know. It's incredibly beautiful and wistful and profound, but also just a gorgeous piece. Of course, the music's going to mean something different now than it did when he wrote it. For me, already, the music feels very different a year later. And that's going to happen, that's going to keep happening, right? Because our times are going to keep on changing. Now, when I listen to that movement, I think it's also an elegy for this year. When he wrote it, it was the beginning of the year. And thinking about this past year now, it's more complicated than just that we lost so many people. I mean, that is just almost impossible to comprehend. But also, there are parts of this period that were beautiful, about being at home, about being with your loved ones at home, about not having the frenetic activity that we normally have. And so now I also feel a little bit of a sense of loss that's going to leave, you know, that we're not going to have that anymore as things start to go back to normal. You know, there's something about the quiet that we've had that has actually been beautiful. So when I hear the music, it's also an elegy for that.
Richard Daniel Poor has said that he hopes what people will gain from this music is like a sense of healing, comfort, solace. What do you hope listeners will gain from hearing this music?
I agree with him about that. I also think that the music helps us to process what happened. So my instinct is that when we start having concerts again and we start going back into normal life, that it's not going to feel very normal for a long time. And that many of us are going to feel almost a kind of PTSD after what happened. And going right back into Beethoven's symphonies, I think will be exciting, but we might need music that also is our music, that came from our experience right now, or that we just went through. And this piece is so relevant. I mean, it so much describes how we felt that I could see a lot of people needing to listen to it and wanting to listen to it in a concert because listening to it will be a way of you know, thinking about what happened and reflecting on it and, you know, trying to make sense of it.
And finally, Simona, what was most memorable for you in working on this project?
I think that I will forever be grateful to this project because not only is it an honor to have been part of something that was this big at this time, but I was really in danger of floundering after I recorded A Character of Quiet. And this project was so engaging, and it was so, I think when we last spoke, I talked to you about how I couldn't find any music that felt right, that when I stopped playing in the spring, a lot of it was because none of the music that I played really made any sense to me with how I was feeling. And then I wound up recording A Character of Quiet, and that music did speak to me, which was Schubert and Glass. But when that project was done, if I hadn't had this to dive into, I think it would have been really hard for me to find something to connect with again. And Richard gave me this incredible gift because he created completely new music that was speaking exactly to how I was feeling. And he gave me the challenge of having to learn his language. And I had to learn it really quickly because we were going to record it in November. And I don't usually learn that quickly. So it was like a lot of different challenges for me. But it all felt right, and it felt engaging and relevant and important to me. And I feel really, really grateful to him for that.
An American Mosaic, with music from Richard Danielpour, written for pianist Simona Dinnerstein. If you're enjoying New Classical Tracks, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it. Help spread the word, and also take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. Thanks to Valerie Kaler, the producer of New Classical Tracks, from American Public Media. Since you're clearly a music fan, let me tell you about another podcast you might enjoy. It's called The Piano Puzzler. Each week, host Fred Child invites composer Bruce Adolph into the studio to play one of his brilliant musical mind games. Bruce takes a familiar tune and disguises it in the style of a classical composer. Then a contestant calls in to try to solve the riddle. It's a lot of fun. If you're up for the challenge, subscribe to The Piano Puzzler podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Julie Almacher.